Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we're really tackling a fascinating topic, how software development decides what gets built.
Oh,
You know what I mean? Like the good, the bad, and the ugly of how we go about doing that. And to do that, today, we're going to be looking at the world of user stories. Specifically, you guys have sent in some fascinating excerpts from this article called Eingefügter Text, which really takes this popular method to
It
task.
really does. It's a good one.
It is. It's thought-provoking for sure. So to get started, you know, maybe just for our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar, you know, we talk about user stories. What are we even talking about? What are they?
So at a very high level, user stories are a way of capturing the needs and wants of the users of a software system. And they're really designed to be short and simple descriptions of a feature or functionality, but from the perspective of that user. So they usually follow a format, something along the lines of, as a user role, I want to do this action so there's some benefit.
So like a classic example would be like, as a frustrated online shopper, I want an easy way to filter out all the junk so I can actually find what I need or something.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Right.
It captures, the user, the frustration, the goal.
Exactly. And that's kind of what the article praises them for. It's like that simplicity, you know? It kind of cuts through all the jargon and gets everyone on the same page.
It can be very powerful for that.
Right. But you know, the article's point, and I think this is where things get interesting, is that simplicity almost becomes the trap. It's like, you know, those cooking shows where they're like, here's what I made earlier, and bam, perfect cake, but you know, what about all the steps in between?
And I think that's what the author's getting at here. It's almost like this over-reliance on user stories points to a bigger issue, which is the lingering ghost of the waterfall model.
Ooh, spooky.
Even in teams that, claim to be agile.
Right. We're all agile now, supposedly.
We say we are, but are we really?
Well, and so for maybe those who haven't been, you know, scarred by waterfall projects, can you maybe just give a quick overview? Like, what is that
But
beast?
waterfall is this very traditional linear approach to software development.
Okay.
It's very rigid, step by step.
Okay.
You define everything up front, all the requirements, then you do all the design, then you do all the coding.
Got it.
Very little room for flexibility, very little room for change.
Right. And the article is saying, even though most teams have moved on, at least in name, we're still kind of stuck in that thinking, just on a smaller scale.
It's like we've taken this waterfall model and we've shrunk it down to the size of a sprint, and the user story becomes that mini waterfall.
So instead of breaking free, we've just miniaturized it. And I can see how that would be problematic, right? Because you focus too much on these isolated pieces and you miss the big picture.
You miss the connections, the dependencies, the gotchas that only emerge later.
Right, like, oh, these pieces don't fit. Or even worse, like, we built the wrong thing entirely.
Yeah, because we didn't think about how it impacts other parts of the system.
Yeah, the ripple effects, right?
Yeah,
And it's
exactly.
interesting because, like, on the surface, user stories seem so great.
Yeah, they do.
Right, it's all about breaking down barriers, using plain language, you know.
The article even praises them for that.
Right, but then it kind of throws this curveball, which is that informality can actually lead to superficial understanding. Like, we're all nodding along, yep, easy search, got it. But the actual complexity of what that entails gets lost.
It's like we're all speaking the same language, but we're not really understanding each other.
Right, exactly. And it's fascinating because they bring up this group, IRB,
IRRB,
which I have to admit, I had to look up.
Me too.
Which is all about requirements engineering, right? Like this whole world of defining what a system should do. And get this, they recognize a huge variety of
Yeah,
formats.
it's not just user stories.
There are use cases, scenarios, prototypes, even good old-fashioned specifications.
It's a whole
It's a
toolbox.
whole workshop, right? But we're so fixated on the user story hammer, we forget all the other tools exist.
I love that analogy.
I do too. So how do we know, when do we reach for those other tools? When is a user story simply not enough?
That's a great question. And I think that's where the author's breakdown of these five UML perspectives gets really insightful.
So UML, for those who maybe haven't encountered it, stands for Unified Modeling Language. It's kind of this way of visualizing and understanding complex systems.
Yeah, it gives you these different lenses to look at the system.
So it's not just the user story lens. It's like, okay, what are all the other lenses that we need? So hit us with those perspectives. What are they? So the five perspectives are user, business, task, implementation, and environment.
Okay, so user stories, by definition, are just the user.
Right, they're just focused on what the user needs and wants.
Right, but there's so much more.
There's so much more.
So, okay, give us an example. Like, how would these other perspectives play out?
Okay, so let's stick with our online store.
Okay.
A classic user story might be, as a customer, I want to find exactly what I'm looking for quickly.
Okay, easy, simple.
Simple, right. But think about the business perspective.
Okay, yeah, the business doesn't care about my needs necessarily.
Well, they care about your needs, but they also care about things like inventory management, profitability, you know, how promotions factor into search results.
Yeah, stuff that I, as the user, I'm not even thinking about.
Exactly. So suddenly, easy search.
It's a lot more complicated.
Gets a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
And then there's the task perspective.
Okay, so that's like how it actually works.
Exactly. The nitty-gritty of how that search actually happens. What steps does the system have to go through?
Got it.
What data needs to be accessed? User stories rarely dive into that level of detail.
Right, so it's like building up this layered understanding.
Exactly.
Okay, what about those last two?
Okay, so implementation.
That's where the rubber meets the road.
Right. That's where we think about what are the technical limitations?
Mm-hmm.
What existing systems do we need to integrate with?
Right.
Budget and timeline constraints.
Mm-hmm.
A user story might say, I want a super fancy search with AI-powered recommendations.
Yeah.
But is that even feasible?
So many factors. A simple user story just doesn't capture.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And lastly, the environment perspective.
Okay.
And this is all about the external factors.
Mm-hmm.
Like legal regulations, data privacy laws, accessibility standards.
Right, the stuff that's easy to forget.
It is.
Oh.
It's crucial.
Yeah.
And often forgotten in the user story, whirlwind.
My mind is officially blown.
Right.
This completely reframes how I think about user stories.
Yeah.
Like, they're important, but just one tiny slice.
Great piece of the puzzle.
Of a much bigger picture, yeah.
Exactly.
And that actually leads us to another fascinating critique in the article, which is this whole idea of invest.
Invest, yeah.
Which, for our listeners, that's that popular criteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Independent, negotiable, valuable, estimable, small, and testable.
All the good things.
Seems logical, right?
Yeah.
You want your stories to be all those things.
On the surface, it makes sense.
Right. But I think both the author and I have some skepticism about whether you can really judge things like independence or estimability from a user story alone.
I think that's a valid concern, yeah.
Right. Mm. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, first off, if we think about those five UML perspectives we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
dependencies can exist across them.
Okay. Yeah. It's not just within the user story.
Right. A user story might seem independent in isolation, but then you factor in the business perspective or the implementation perspective, and suddenly there's this whole web of connections.
So independent on the surface, but in reality, it's pulling on a whole bunch of other threads.
Exactly.
Okay, what about estimability? Because that one always
feels... That one's tough.
Right, like how can you possibly?
Yeah, I mean, the article rightly points out that estimating effort is incredibly complex.
It's like predicting the weather a year in advance.
Right, there are just so many variables
mm-hmm.
that a simple story just can't capture.
Like, what are some of those things?
I mean, the author mentions things like, you know, the complexity of the task, the skills of the team, the available resources,
mm-hmm.
the potential risks, even team dynamics, all these things that impact how long something takes to build.
And those are often the things that, you know, torpedo our estimates.
They do. They hide in the shadows and then they jump out and get you.
Exactly. So this is making me question a lot of best practices I've taken for granted.
Yeah, it's a good reminder to question everything.
It is. And it kind of leads us to, I think, the core of what the author is advocating for, which is a much more iterative, collaborative approach.
Mm-hmm. It's about moving away from these rigid frameworks
yeah.
and embracing the messiness.
So it's not about checking boxes like yeah. estimable or independent,
mm-hmm.
but it's about ongoing conversation between everyone.
Users, developers, business folks. The whole team.
Right. Everyone has to be in on it.
It's a team sport.
It is. And, you know, I think I'm starting to see a theme here, which is it's all about avoiding reductionist thinking.
Yeah.
You know, we take this complex thing, software development.
Which it is. It's so complex.
Right. And we try to squeeze it into these neat little boxes when in reality, it's much messier.
Much messier. Yeah.
So much messier.
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole sometimes.
Right. Exactly. So I think, you know, we've given our listener a lot to digest already.
We have. Yeah.
But before we jump into, like, okay, what do we do with all this? What are the alternatives?
Yeah. What are the practical steps?
Right. Let's take a pause here and come back in part two to explore those in more detail.
That sounds good.
Okay. We'll see you in part two.
All right.
Welcome back, everybody. Last time we were getting our minds blown.
I know, right?
By the idea that user stories, while useful, are just one tool in a much bigger requirements toolbox.
It's a whole workshop.
It is a whole workshop, yeah. So let's dive into some specifics.
Okay, yeah.
Like, what are some of those alternative formats, and how do they help us avoid those user story pitfalls?
So one that the Eingefügter text piece mentions is the use case.
Okay.
And you can think of it like a user story focuses on a single goal.
Okay.
Right? Like, I want to check out quickly.
Yeah.
But a use case maps out the entire interaction, like start to finish.
Okay.
With all the steps and branches along the way.
So it's less about the what and more about the how.
Exactly.
Like almost like a flow chart of all the possible paths the user could take.
Yeah, exactly. A detailed flow chart.
Got it.
So let's stick with our online store example.
Okay.
That quick checkout story could have a use case that includes things like adding items to the cart, entering shipping info, choosing payment, confirming the order, handling discounts or promotions, receiving a confirmation email, like all those steps.
Yeah, and you're forced to think through all those details.
Yeah.
That might get glossed over in a simple story,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, what happens if the credit card is declined?
Exactly.
What if the item's out of stock? A use case makes you address those edge cases up front.
You got it.
Right.
You have to think about it.
Yeah, it's like the difference between saying, I want a robot that makes me coffee.
Okay.
Versus actually mapping out every single step.
All the steps.
That robot needs to take.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Including like handling things like an empty water tank or the wrong type of beans.
Empty water tank. Yeah, I got to think about that.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So use cases sound great for complex interactions.
Yeah.
But what about understanding the user's context? You know, like, their motivations. Why are they even doing this thing? The article also talks about scenarios.
Yes.
Which sound a bit more, I don't know, narrative driven.
Yes. Yeah, scenarios are like mini stories.
Okay.
That bring the user to life.
Okay.
So instead of just as a user, I want to search for products.
Mm-hmm.
A scenario might be it's Friday night. Sarah's planning a last minute dinner party. She's on her tablet. The kids are screaming in the background.
Oh, I feel that.
And she needs to find a recipe that uses ingredients she already has.
Wow, you can practically feel Sarah's stress.
You can feel it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that paints such a richer picture than a bare bones user story.
For sure.
Right. It helps us understand not just what she wants to do, but why.
Yeah, the why is so important.
Right. And that can completely change how we design the search functionality.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe we need to prioritize filters for ingredients or, you know,
make it super simple.
Make it extra simple for, you know, distracted cooks.
Absolutely.
So I'm seeing how these kind of like build on each other.
Right.
You start with the user story, then you use a use case for complexity, a scenario to add context.
Layers of understanding.
Layers. Okay. What about getting actual user feedback early on?
Yes.
That's where prototypes come in, right?
Prototypes are essential.
Yeah.
And they can be anything, you know, from a rough sketch to a clickable mock-up.
Mm-hmm.
The point is to get something tangible in front of users.
Right. Like, even if it's just a facade.
Even if it's just a facade.
So you can interact with it.
Play with it, yeah.
And give us feedback.
And tell us what's wrong with it.
Yeah, and that feedback is gold.
It's so valuable.
Right. It's one thing to describe how you want something to work. It's another to actually use it.
Totally.
And realize, oh, this is totally confusing. Or,
exactly.
This doesn't solve my problem at all.
Well, you miss so much when you just talk about it.
Yeah.
You got to get your hands dirty.
And even if you're not building, like, a user interface, right? Prototypes can be helpful.
Yeah.
Like, imagine you're developing an algorithm for, say, recommending music.
Oh.
You could prototype it using a simple spreadsheet.
Yeah, just to test out the logic.
Or script.
Yeah.
To test out the logic and get feedback on whether the recommendations make sense.
Absolutely.
I'm starting to think of prototypes as almost like thought experiments.
I like that.
That you can bring to life and play with.
Yeah, make them real.
Right. Okay, so, but what's interesting is the article also advocates for, wait for it, specifications.
Specifications.
I thought those were banished to the waterfall dungeon.
I know, right?
Too rigid, too much upfront detail, right?
Yeah, but the author makes a good point.
Okay.
Sometimes detailed specifications are necessary.
Okay, in what situations are we talking?
Well, think about software for medical devices.
Okay, yeah.
Or flight control systems.
High stakes.
High stakes. In those situations, ambiguity is not an option.
Right. As a pilot, I want to land safely.
Doesn't quite cut it.
Doesn't quite cut it when lives are at stake.
Not at all.
But Are there cases where specs make sense even in, you know, less critical systems?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like what?
If you're building something that needs to integrate with a bunch of other systems,
Okay.
clear specs for those interfaces can save a lot of headaches down the road.
Right. So you're not like, you know, trying to figure out.
Reverse engineering it later.
Right. How these things are supposed to talk to each other.
Exactly. Or if you have a really complex algorithm,
Okay.
documenting that logic in detail can help ensure everyone understands how it works.
Right.
And can maintain it.
Right. So there's still a place.
There's still a place.
Through specs.
Yeah, we can't completely throw them out.
Okay, so we've gone from thinking user stories are the be-all and end-all to seeing them as one piece.
One piece of a much bigger puzzle.
Of a much bigger puzzle, yeah.
Exactly.
And the choice of which piece to use depends on the context.
The context, the complexity, the risk involved.
Right.
There's no one size fits all.
It's all about being adaptable.
Adaptable, yeah.
Using our judgment.
Which is hard.
Which is hard, yeah. Speaking of judgment, I'm curious to dig deeper into that whole effort estimation dilemma.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Right. The article seemed pretty skeptical about the estimable part.
Rightfully so.
Of invest, you know, like trying to accurately estimate effort.
Based solely on a user story.
Based solely on a user story.
It's like, yeah, impossible.
It's like trying to predict the weather a year in advance.
It really is.
Too many variables.
Way too many.
Right. And that a simple story can't capture.
Yeah, you can't fit it all in there.
So if we can't rely on user stories for accurate estimations, what's the alternative?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is, because we still have to estimate.
We do. We do.
Yeah.
I think, first of all, we need to accept that estimation is inherently uncertain.
Okay, so embrace the unknown.
Embrace the unknown.
Embrace the messiness.
The messiness, yes.
Of software development?
It's not a precise science.
It's not, yeah.
It's more of an art.
More of an art, okay.
Yeah, so instead of obsessing over these precise numbers.
Yeah, which are always wrong.
Always wrong, yeah.
Focus on relative sizing.
Relative sizing, yeah.
And complexity.
And there are some techniques that can help with that.
Okay, like what?
Like story points or t-shirt sizing.
For our listeners who haven't encountered those, what are we talking about?
Okay, so story points are abstract units of effort.
Okay.
So instead of saying, this task will take 4 hours, you assign it, say, 3 story points based on its complexity and uncertainty.
Oh, okay.
The key is it's relative to other tasks.
Okay.
So a 5-point story is bigger than a 3-point story, but not necessarily twice as big in terms of hours.
Okay, so it's like a shorthand.
Yeah, like a shorthand.
For communicating complexity without getting bogged down in the specifics.
Exactly. And as you work as a team, you start to get a feel for, okay, how many story points can we typically handle in a sprint?
You got it.
T-shirt sizing is similar.
Okay.
Just using sizes like small, medium, large instead of numbers.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because it acknowledges the fuzziness.
The fuzziness, yeah.
Right.
It's fuzzy.
It's not this precise.
It's not a science.
Right. We can't predict the future perfectly.
We can't, no.
So I like that it kind of acknowledges that.
Embraces it.
Embraces it. Okay, so we've thoroughly dissected the limitations of user stories.
We have, yeah.
Explored a whole arsenal
toolbox
of alternative tools, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But now the big question is, what do we do with all this knowledge?
Yeah, how do we put it into practice?
How do we actually put these more holistic approaches into practice?
That's the challenge.
That's the challenge, yeah.
And that's what we'll tackle in part 3.
All right, we'll see you in part 3. Welcome back, Deep Divers. We've made it to part 3.
Part 3, the grand finale.
We're ready for the action. Let's do it. All right. So we've explored the limitations of user stories.
Yes, we have.
Discovered a whole treasure chest of tools.
So many tools.
For crafting a more complete picture.
A more holistic view.
Of what we're building.
Absolutely.
So we've talked about use cases, scenarios, prototypes, even, you know, specifications.
A whole shebang.
But now comes the, you know, the rubber meets the road part.
Yeah, the fun part.
The
yeah.
fun part. How do we actually weave these approaches into our, you know, day to day?
Yeah, how do we actually do it?
Software development process. Give us the actionable insights.
Okay, so first and foremost, I think we need to foster a culture of collaboration
right.
and open communication.
So fewer documents being tossed over the wall?
Yeah. Less of that.
And more actual conversation.
More talking to each other, yeah.
Okay, I like it.
Documents have their place.
Okay.
But they shouldn't be the main form of communication.
Right, right.
So encourage face-to-face brainstorming sessions.
Okay.
Whiteboard sketching, quick feedback loops,
mm-hmm.
involve everyone from developers to users to business stakeholders.
The article was really critical of how user stories can lead to that superficial understanding.
Yes.
So I can see how these ongoing conversations really help.
They force you to talk to each other.
They dig deeper.
Yeah, uncover those hidden complexities.
Okay, good. And then, you know, speaking of tools, like how do we actually integrate?
Yeah, where do they fit in?
Those alternative formats into our workflow? Is it like throw out the user stories kind of thing?
No, I don't think so.
Or more of an add as needed approach?
Yeah, more of an add as needed.
Okay.
It really depends, you know.
On the project?
On the project, on the team, on the context.
Okay.
You know, for really complex interactions, use cases can be incredibly valuable.
Mm.
Scenarios can help us understand user context and motivations.
Right.
Prototypes are great for getting early feedback.
Yeah.
And specifications, well, they're still relevant.
In certain situations.
When precision is paramount.
Right, right. We talked about that. So it's not about abandoning user stories.
No.
But rather like augmenting them.
Augmenting, yeah.
With these other tools as needed.
Exactly. Think of user stories as the spark.
Okay.
That ignites the project.
Okay, I like that.
And then we use these other tools to kind of build a more
complete,
comprehensive and nuanced understanding.
It's like starting with that rough sketch.
Yeah, the rough sketch.
And then gradually adding detail.
Color, texture.
To create a masterpiece.
Exactly.
I love it. And then, you know, when it comes to the ever tricky effort estimation.
Oh, yeah, that one.
I'm thinking about those techniques you mentioned, like story points, t-shirt sizing.
Yeah, those are good ones.
They seem to kind of acknowledge that we can't predict the future.
We can't, no.
Which feels a lot more honest.
Way more honest.
Than pretending we can.
Yeah, and I think honesty and transparency are key here.
Yeah.
You know, story points, t-shirt sizes, they're great for having those open conversations. Mm-hmm. About complexity and risk.
And it shifts the focus, right?
It does.
Instead of like, this will take 4 hours.
Yeah, which is always wrong.
Which is always wrong.
They're like, this is a medium-sized task compared to that other thing.
Which feels a lot more...
Manageable.
Manageable, yeah.
And realistic.
And as you work as a team, you kind of get a feel...
You get calibrated.
You get calibrated, right.
For how much you can actually accomplish.
Yeah, and what those sizes actually mean.
Exactly.
In your context.
In your world.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's so much of this boils down to, like...
The human element.
Communication, collaboration.
Adaptability.
It's all connected.
Right. Embracing that messiness.
The messiness, yes.
Of software development.
It's messy, but it's fun.
It is fun, yeah.
Yeah.
And being willing to adjust.
To be flexible.
Based on, you know, the specific challenges of each project.
Every project is different.
This deep dive has been, like, a real eye-opener for me.
Me too.
I'm walking away with, like... A renewed appreciation for the complexity.
It's complex of what we do.
Yeah.
And like a whole toolbox of techniques.
A whole workshop.
To tackle it, yeah.
It's there if you need it.
So what's the like one key takeaway you want our listeners to remember?
User stories are a valuable tool, but they're not the whole workshop.
Ooh, I like that.
Don't mistake simplicity for completeness.
User stories. A tool, not the whole workshop.
Whoa!
That's going on a sticky note above my desk.
Perfect.
I love it. Well, this has been incredible.
It has been fun.
And I hope our listeners are feeling just as like inspired.
Energized.
As I am to approach software development with a fresh perspective.
Me too. It's always good to challenge our assumptions.
It is, yeah. What other perspectives are often overlooked in your work?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah. How could broadening the lens lead to better outcomes? You know, keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
Keep pushing those boundaries.
That's what it's all about.
I love that. So well said. As always, we've included links to some further reading in the show notes.
Yes, check those out.
For those who want to dive even deeper.
There's a lot out there.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, happy building.
Happy building, everyone.